She's already standing behind me.
I'm excited. Hi, everybody. Can you hear me? Maybe? So my name is Olivia Ramirez. I'm a research coordinator at Mount Sinai School of Medicine. And the analyses that I'll be presenting were conducted by Jeanette Singone, and the PI, the principal investigator, was Luz Claudio. So how does this work? Okay. I have no financial relationships to this close. And so just to start off generally, we know all these things. Obesity is a growing concern, especially childhood obesity. The latest estimate from NHANES figure is 17% of children aged 6 to 11. And that is data from 2003 to 2006. They didn't find a significant difference between 03, 04, and 05, 06, so they just pulled them. Among New York City school children, the estimated prevalence of overweight or obesity was 23.8, so a little higher than the national prevalence, actually a bit higher. And I just wanted to clarify that I'll be saying obesity and overweight a couple times in this presentation, but what I mean the same thing. It depends on what study I'm citing or the standards that are being referenced. So I mean that it's the body mass index value is equal to or over 95%, the 95th percentile for body mass index, according to the CDC growth standards. So we also know that obesity there are disparities across race, ethnicity, rural, urban groups, things like that. And it's especially alarming because with so many life years left ahead of them, children have both immediate and long-term health consequences from obesity. Now, studies often show that disparities in obesity persist even when controlled for individual factors like income, education, insurance. And so it raises the question of whether factors external to the individual are having an effect on their status, their BMI status. In particular, we were thinking of social capital or community capital as having an effect on shaping resources in the community, food availability, just general social capital. And we wanted to ask that question and thought perhaps studying neighborhood socioeconomic characteristics had potential to provide a more nuanced definition of predictors for obesity prevalence. So that brings us to our study objectives. We wanted to concurrently examine individual and neighborhood level risk factors for obesity to determine if neighborhood level socioeconomic status indicators were useful in explaining disparities in obesity, especially in urban children. This is our sample. So the study was a secondary data analysis of a study that was conducted in 02-03 in New York City school children. It was in grades K through 5. There were two classrooms selected per grade, per school that was surveyed. And on the left there is just a timeline that we provided to the principals. We had a pretty rigorous campaign trying to get these principals to participate because in New York City, the schools, I mean, in all schools, but principals are very overloaded with requirements, especially after No Child Left Behind. And so we really wanted to get their participation. It was kind of difficult. So now also I wanted to mention that the original objective of the study was to determine asthma prevalence. But this slide kind of shows why asthma and neighborhood SES is very closely linked, especially in New York. So if I move this. All right. So these are maps of New York. Here you have Manhattan. Here's the Bronx, Queens, Brooklyn, and Staten Island. And so this first table is showing you asthma hospitalization rates in the 5 to 12 age range. And it's the darker colors indicate the higher hospitalization rates. The second looks very similar, kind of seeing the same happen in the South Bronx and Harlem and Central Brooklyn. And that's median household income, darker again being the lower income. And then the final being percentage of minority residents in those zip codes. And again, you're seeing sort of similar darkness density. So anyway, moving on. So the sampling methodology sort of ranked those zip codes by their hospitalization rates, took 11 from the top, median, and lowest, and then sampled a certain number of schools out of those zip codes. And we the result was 26 zip codes, one school sampled per zip code. Those stars there indicate where the schools were located throughout the city. And our overall survey response was we had 5,250 surveys, and it was overall representative of the New York City school population as well as the surrounding zip code of that school, except for the fact that it was a slightly lower representation of males and African Americans. Now, for our data analysis, we had to calculate age and sex-specific body mass index, and we used the CDC, a SAS program from CDC, it's available on the website, to calculate their body mass index value and then rank it according by percentile. And here are the ranges. So overweight is equal to or above 95th percentile. At risk of overweight is between the 85th and 95th. And so on. 5th through 85th is healthy weight, and underweight is under the 5th percentile. So our individual factors that we looked at were race, ethnicity, parent education, income, language of survey completion, and we wanted to look at some neighborhood factors. And these values we got from Census 2000 data. And so we looked at median household income, percent of minority residents with high school diploma or equivalent, single-parent households, median age of housing, and percent of households linguistically isolated, which means if someone's considered linguistically isolated, it means that they respond on the census that they think that no one in their household above age 14 speaks English fairly well. So it's just a measure of sort of their ability to get access or communicate with their surrounding. So responses were weighted to represent the surrounding zip code, the public school population in the zip code. We adjusted for the design effect, the clustering by zip code, and the stratification by hospitalization rate. And we used SAS to do the univariate and bivariate analyses. And then we used STATA to conduct a multinomial logistic regression model. And briefly, what the multinomial logistic regression model is usually with logistic, you have 0 or 1, present or absent. And for multinomial, it's when you have several layers, more than two levels of an outcome, which means, so for us, we had 4, overweight, at risk of overweight, healthy weight, and underweight. So we had 4 levels, and you have a reference level, and then you have your 3 levels for us that we were comparing. So it gives you 3 logistic regression models comparing overweight to healthy weight, underweight to healthy weight, and so forth. For response, like I said, the overall response was 50-50, which was 76.9% of the surveys distributed. However, the responses to height and weight data, which we needed for our BMI calculations, only represented 55% of the surveys that we distributed. So that was very interesting. And this was parent response data. Again, it wasn't directly measured. Responders to the height and weight data were more likely to be Asian, live in high-income households, and have parents that had greater, higher education. This table is pretty awful to look at, but it's just showing you the comparison of non-responders and responders. Again, higher income, higher education, and also they were less likely to complete the survey in Spanish, which, you know, something that I have here to say is that given that obesity is typically lower in populations that were more likely to respond to the height and weight data, we would venture to say that our overall prevalence estimate, which I'll present soon, is conservative rather than inflated. And you can let me know what you think about that. So we had 5 primary findings, the first being the overall prevalence of overweight, and that's 34.2. Okay. The Department of Health in New York City still goes by that 23.8, 24% prevalence, and that's from the 2000-2001 data. So this is the most recent so far that I know of. And again, at risk, overweight is another 16.7. If you consider those two together, that's over 50%, 50.9%. Prevalence of overweight is greater in minority children, specifically African American, Puerto Rican, other Latino, and Mexican. That's just, I'm just showing that because it's above the overall prevalence. And let's see what else. Also, gender, with males, prevalence being higher among males, among those of low income, among parents, children whose parents had a high school diploma or less than a high school diploma, and higher among those who completed the Spanish surveys. So also, when we looked at overweight with household income, we saw a significant inverse relationship. So as income decreased, the prevalence of overweight increased. Finally, with the multinomial logistic regression, the only neighborhood-level factor that remained significant was median household income. And this was, again, after adjusting for the demographic variables that I showed you. And here is, again, a huge table. But I'm going to show, so what we should just focus on is the overweight, because that's the regression that we're interested in here, actually, the model that we're interested in. And so neighborhood, median household income, gender, and ethnicity were significant for overweight versus healthy weight. Specifically, the risk ratio was 9% risk, basically. The increment is for every $10,000 in income. So as your income decreases, you have a higher risk, 9% higher risk of overweight compared to the healthy weight again. Same for, well, for it's a higher risk in males, and it's also a higher risk, oh, I'm sorry, how do I go back? Thank you. Pretty large in Latinos. It's 2.35, if you see over there, and I believe African-American were also significant, and other Latino. And so to clarify, other Latino includes Central and South American, Cuban, and those who specified more than one Latino ethnicity. So let's see. And the fifth is kind of going off of that, what I just said about gender and ethnicity remaining significant. Now, these are just kind of summing what I just said. Let me just go to my notes. So the prevalence was 34.2%, and as I said, this is in comparison to a 2 years previous, which was 23.8. I will say that the difference between our study and the study that cites 23.8 is that they directly measured height and weight. But the sample size was similar. It was about 3,000. Overweight increased incrementally as neighborhood income decreased, and the relationship between weight and neighborhood median income was strongest when compared to healthy weight. By that I mean, and I should have showed this to you, but the other formulas that came out, so comparing healthy weight to underweight or the at-risk of overweight, the neighborhood median income was not significant in those models. And the other neighborhood-level SES indicators that we were looking at were not significant, which kind of brings me to my final slide, which is talking about how our next steps are to look at multi-level models, because we got some reviews when we tried to submit this paper, and they suggested, rightly so, that conducting a multi-level model would be very beneficial because of the correlation that's involved when you assign everyone in the same zip code the same median household income. And so we're just trying to account for the variance in the correct way. So that's next for us. So I'm open to any questions. Thank you. Yes? Five to 12, K through five. Yes?
Or if the progression from being underweight to normal weight to at risk and then eventually.
I'm actually not sure. I as I said, I didn't conduct this analysis, and that I'm not sure why they did the multinomial as opposed to the, did you say ordinal? Yeah. Right. I actually don't know. And I can't say that there's any evidence that they're jumping as it would be in sort of the multinomial kind of outcomes. So, yes. It was a data survey conducted through Mount Sinai, and it was originally a survey of asthma prevalence in the school, in New York City schools. Yes. Right. Yes. Right. I don't have the exact figure. I think it was somewhere around in the 80% response. And we thought that having the intervals, so it would be under 25, 25 to 50, that would be an easier response rather than, you know, the actual number, absolute value. It would be less as a deterrent for the parents to respond. And so, yeah. Yes. Hi.
Well, one final question.
Yeah. No, we didn't. I'm not even familiar with that. What do you mean by that?
So let's say people's decision to locate in a particular neighborhood is not random. So
okay.
There are various factors they take into account to decide on which neighborhood to locate.
Mm-hmm. I would love to talk with you about that afterwards. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes. Yes. The only thing that the way that I've interpreted that one is that it's prepubertal for females, and so at that point, males may be larger. You know, they're growing at a faster rate. But am I wrong?
No, not necessarily. The BMI also doesn't take into account, like, muscle mass. So, like, if boys tend to, you know, be a little bit more muscular than girls, then that's going to put them in a different weight category or BMI category than, you know, somebody who doesn't have a whole lot of muscle. So, I mean, that's an assumption. I'm saying that's one of the many reasons why typically BMI are high for men is
right.
Because they have muscle and women carry more fat.
Right.
Self-report BMI parents, we know that, you know, for self-reported BMI, that women underreport their weight and men overreport their height. So it may be similar for parents, may overreport a boy's height, and, you know, that relationship may, you know, the self-reported BMI bias for parental report. I don't know if anybody knows if that kind of holds for parents as well as.
Well, technically, sometimes they say that parental reports of a child's weight tend to underreport.
And maybe overreport height for boys.
Probably overreport height, yeah.
Yeah, so that.
Okay. Great. Yeah. All right,
thank you. And we're going to keep moving with our next presenter. Let me go ahead and set this up.